The 2017 AFL season is proudly brought to you by Toyota. Toyota footy. Oh, what a feeling. Triple M footy is the number one football call on radio. Footy's on the radio. And your front row.
For the Fiat Ducato with up to 15 cubic metres of cargo capacity. Move with more grunt.
Welcome to the Saturday Rub.
For McDonald's Gourmet Creations.
Triple M rocks footy.
Oh, Saturday afternoon, the Triple MCG never looks any better than this. The sun's shining, the Coliseum's going to be, well, if not packed, there'll be enough in here to watch two very, very good teams go at it. The Hawks and the Adelaide Crows, that's coming up in about an hour and 45 minutes. But before that, the best in the business just getting warmed right up in here too. Look at Bristle. He looks like a cat that's eaten every bit of cream. look at Brian.
We've got to address something with you, JP.
Oh, that's coming up in a second. Just wait till we get to it. Damo's in very nice form. Career best. Hello, Purple.
Hello, Jim. Keen to talk about John Longmire's anger from the umpires for the second consecutive time in a match against the Bulldogs.
Like that Dempster as well. There's more on that front. We'll get to the bottom of that. And the Duck just comes in and really just assesses on a Saturday. Just looks around and says, righto, we'll bring it, whatever it is, bring it, I'm ready for it.
One thing, when he does come in a crispy white shirt with the buttons almost ripping out of their sockets, you can be assured that it's not just the day he's interested in.
Have you got somewhere else to go after this?
I had an appointment on this morning, but how are you, boys? Nice to be here, listeners. What a beautiful day, I agree. It's turned out to be a perfect day, and you're right. We'll find out a little bit about Adelaide today. Obviously, they were very good last week, but under not a lot of pressure. And obviously, the Hawks are being beaten and un-Hawthorn-like last week. A lot of skill errors. Don't normally see that. So I'm really looking forward to the footy today.
Yeah, it's a bit of double handling from the Hawks, which you very rarely see. So they'll be better today, no doubt. What do you got, Brian?
Now, I don't know how to explain this, but word is drifting out of the Grand Prix, which is only a few days old, last weekend, in fact, that, you know, all the big names are there, Vettel and Ricciardo and Raikkonen.
Well, they're driving, right?
They're all Hamilton. There, but, you know, you'd expect that that's a fairly much a cocooned world.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what happens in a GP.
But, oh, no, the word has come through to me that our host, JB, has tried to bust into this world of top wankers. and he's tried to force his way in there. Information came to me out of the Foxtel enclosure. This Foxtel enclosure, for those that don't, only the biggest of wigs attend in the Foxtel enclosure.
And fair enough.
Peter Tonner, the head of one of the heads of Fox, Patrick Delaney.
Would have been there.
Jared Freckberg. He was there
all
as well.
All the heavies.
They're all there. Now, it has come to my information, Lewis Hamilton.
He wasn't in there.
Let me tell you, he was at one point. Our host, JB, was part of the Foxtel arrangement. Now,
what does that mean?
Every time that Peter Tonner, the head of Foxtel, shook his leg, JB was hanging on to and was sort of mounting him. And Lewis Hamill walked in. JB didn't blink. He said, "Peter Tonner, we were Foxtel, blah, blah, blah." And he just kept going and going. And this behavior became extraordinarily obvious that JB was... had to be separated by PA to the head honchos in there. They had to come up and say, Mr. Brayshaw, Mr. Tonner's had enough of you. Could you move over there?
So what are you reading into this?
Is this true, JB, that you're in the Foxtel tent?
That is the greatest lot of mayo laying I've ever heard, Brian. Yes, it's true, I was in the tent.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only
that's
true.
Were you...
auditioning.
Yes, were you fronting up to the head honchos at Foxtel and spending rather a lot of time with them?
Bristle, I think that I was eye candy for their platform. That's all. That's all I think it was.
Oh, no.
I tell you, I had a bloody good day. It was that's what it was.
They
it was
reckon
fantastic day.
There were more sunglasses worn in that corporate suite than anywhere else in Australia at the same time. The sunnies and the little canary yellow tied sort of lightly knitted jumper over the shoulder with a nice little brand underneath.
Oh, really?
Lacoste.
I will tell you that I did say this during the week that himself, Dermot Brereton, walked in later on. Typical of Dermot, he walks in a minute before the race starts. The thing starts at midday. Dermot gets there at 1 to 5 or whatever time it starts. White jeans, Italian loafers. He's got the fluoro blue popped collar polo. I looked at him. I said, you will never change.
Well, the thing is, JB, you're now fitting into his world.
Oh, you'll never get anywhere near that. It's, some of that mail's correct, Bristol, but there's some of it that probably isn't quite there. Hey, last night, what did we think? You boys did a great job of calling it on the Seven Network. 23 points. The Dogs, who just keep winning the games, Brian, that they should win.
Yeah, they were really impressive. They battled early. Sydney looked like they were going to go really well early, and then the Dogs were able to get in front, and then Sydney were able to hit the front in the last quarter. So for Sydney, for me, it was an exceptional performance, given that they had three first-gamers. How do you win or have a chance of winning a game of football with three first-gamers? Plus four or five of their starting 22 out of the lineup. I thought they did well to be competitive.
Eight of their agree. Blokes have played less than 20 games.
They were less experienced than the Bulldogs, way less experienced. And it was without an influence. Parker didn't have a big game. Hannabury was quiet.
Franklin got late.
Buddy was quiet, other than that purple patch in the last quarter where he really turned it on. So Kennedy wasn't at his absolute best.
No, he wasn't.
You mentioned last night the turning point was probably Tippett getting injured, because what did it do to Reed?
The thing about Reed, I mean, Reed went into the ruck for small periods. Reed hasn't got the body to play in the ruck, and he played very good as a forward, but it did change things up. Obviously, in Sydney's forward line, because they went with the three talls. They dominated at the start, and they had to throw that team around. I thought they were really stretching the Bulldogs' defence, but obviously that changed when he was injured.
Tell us about the deliberate decision, Damo. It's all the talking point this morning. The AFL have come out saying that it was the right call, even though almost everyone watching it thought differently.
I did think differently. Let's go back over it, though. Luke Beveridge, the Western Bulldogs coach, Jim, he commented. We might actually wait with Luke Beveridge on it, Jim, because we'll speak to him about with Marcus Bontempelli about that.
He's coming up shortly.
Yeah, look, I felt that the briefing we got, clubs get it, media gets the briefing. I felt the briefing we got said that was okay. Now, I know you in the box have other opinions. So I thought it was a wrong decision by the umpire last night, but you're right. On what they told us.
Because basically if it was inside the width of the square, you know, the length of the square, then there was a feeling that the players would get a lot more latitude.
And this is where the confusion comes, because what you're saying is right. That's what we were told, and anything outside the square, you're in trouble. Inside the square, you're okay. But you've got to take the square out of it now, because the square no longer applies, because he's within the square, so therefore he can push it through before behind. So then the question is, was he under pressure? So it's got nothing to do with the square now, because he's in there. Was he under enough pressure?
I reckon
he was allowed to concede. See, I reckon there was a couple of metres of separation. I don't think there was.
I think it was less than that. I think Liam Picken actually slowed down.
He did.
Knowing. So he probably slowed down enough to make it another half a metre, BT. But I thought it was a metre and a half at the most. And the fact that Picken slowed down, he had an awareness. He thought, hit this through. That's pressure to me. Picken, one of the best pressure players in the Bulldogs forward line. You're telling me if he's a metre and a half away, you don't consider that pressure?
Marcus Adams earlier in the game, identical situation. Pressure was perhaps a little bit closer maybe, but he didn't want to take the risk. So why didn't he not want to take the risk by not rushing the behind? Why didn't he try and keep it in the field of play?
Just to back over, the AFL has cleared that decision as the right one. This is Luke Beveridge's take on it.
If you can make another decision, if you're not under direct pressure, it always weighs in. I don't know whether there was enough pressure on that. I haven't seen the replay, but I mean the deliberate out of bounds. I mean, at one stage we kicked one out of a stoppage from D50 that trickled out. We're under pressure, and it trickled out. Now I think now we just expect that they're nearly all going to be paid. You know, whether the actual intent is there or not doesn't really matter. The deliberate rush behind, though, I don't know. As you can tell, I've got nothing.
Why do we even ask the AFL whether they got it right or wrong?
Because they say 99 times out of 100.
They have admitted they've got, not those ones wrong necessarily, but field decisions they've acknowledged they've got.
Yeah, not many.
Back in 2008.
But Purple, this is what we were all in the same briefing. Well, actually, you guys might have gone because you'd already had the briefing at 7. But when we were in there, I remember...
Same briefing.
I remember saying to the two guys in there, Schwabe being one of them, why don't you just treat rushed behind, deliberate, the same way you treat it around the boundary, and then it'll make it simple for everyone. Mm. Yep. And they basically acknowledged, Purple, because you were in there, that that is coming. Mm. That's almost a year away.
Not there yet, though, was it?
No, yeah. And that's where the confusion. If they treat that the same as everywhere else, then we'll find, I reckon it'll be brilliant.
The ramification, though, for the rush behind is obviously greater than an around the ground.
That's right. Well, that decision last night, I thought, was in line with the out-of-bounds rule.
Yeah, yeah, probably. Yeah,
it wasn't. Yeah. The other thing that I will say, and I know they trolled it during the JLT series, the penalty's too harsh. I think for something like that, BT, to just get an automatic goal.
So you think a ball up is more
appropriate? I think a ball up is more appropriate. I mean, you'd hate to see, at the end of the day, that was probably the breaking point for the Sydney Swans, that decision. That's what broke their back
technically
last night. And it is, well, I agree to disagree.
In the harsher world of
well,
this year.
The other thing, Damo, it won't do is help the Sydney Swans conspiracy theorists who have been headless for 6 months after the grand final, where they thought they copped the greatest pounding of all time, and it's pretty hard to argue. And then last night again, 31-19 or 18, freeze, for and against. The Dogs have, I think I'm right in saying, and we'll get our steward 100% nail this, but last season in a 26-game sample, Purple, I think they were only behind in the free kick count 4 times. And over the course of the 6 months, they were 112 free kicks up against their opponents. Mm. So the argument within the inner circles of the AFL, and we discussed this last year, there were some high-profile coaches going to the AFL saying, what the bloody hell's going on here, is that the Dogs get a better run than almost anyone.
Yep.
I don't know if that's true or not, but it's hard to argue.
Well, the finals figures, I know, isolated outside of the 22 home and away games, Jim, certainly point in that direction you've underlined. And yes, the Swans were furious, and yes, the Swans had in their own way. Were they? Yeah, well, in their own way.
Al Clarkson went to print saying, how can we lay 100 tackles or whatever and be rewarded once?
We get told not to do this, obviously, in the media, but you can't ignore how poor they were last night. I thought the umpires, and I gave them a rap last week, I thought they were sensational for whatever reason last night. There were times where the Sydney player had no prior opportunity. There's numbers all around. Bulldog player grabs, holding the ball. The reverse happens to the Bulldog players, ball it up. And then that happened time and time again, I thought, last night. I just thought they had a bad night. We all have bad nights. They had one of them.
I don't think they did have
a bad because night. You're real no, but sucky uppy.
No, but don't bully me.
Bristle, it's impossible to bully you. You are unbullyable.
Don't bully me.
Now listen, Duck.
I've heard it.
Don't bully.
Don't like say it in a tone.
Sheepish little lamb. Like, don't bully me.
That is the answer. Because I'm going to give it to you in a different tone.
Okay.
That's, you know, I disagree with you.
Okay.
I think you're wrong.
Okay.
I think you are being an umpire and Brian bullier. And I think you should back off and give him a crack. Because I think if you go back seriously and look at each of those ones you're worried about, I reckon you'll probably go, okay, they made one mistake for the night or two mistakes.
Oh, Brian. Come on,
I'm not
Brian.
That's guy, I couldn't give a stuff.
But what about the Swans?
I want to ask you something before we do that. One other thing. Travis Cloke.
Yep, very good last night.
Now, he was very good last night. He was good as well before. What did you make of his game, just quickly?
No, I thought he was very good. Marked the footy really well and actually used the footy better last night, BT.
Yep, all right.
Well, the Swans.
Come back to him later on.
Two losses now. Obviously, Port Adelaide last week was a really bad loss. Last night was a good loss, if there's such a thing. I reckon if they produce that, Duck, for the remainder of the season, they're still going to be up in the top four calculation.
It's a big game this week they've got.
They've got Collingwood at the SCG.
Haven't won the game, neither have they. Well, CG. Collingwood play very well in Sydney.
Collingwood, then West Coast at home, then GWS in Canberra.
West Coast at Perth.
On a Friday night. Oh, yeah, that's what I meant, West Coast at their home.
Yeah.
That is tough. And then they've got Brisbane Carlton after that. So after round seven, they could be 3-4. If you went on,
which isn't disastrous, is it? I mean, you can
still. They're the only side. They're the only side in it that has got off to, and they're notoriously bad starters.
Oh, yeah.
How many rounds into a season of footy do you think, Duck, that you can have a line on most teams? Is it 4 rounds in? Is it 6? Before you think you know what's going on with them.
Since being back in the media over the last 4 or 5 years, and I don't know whether you feel the same when you're calling JB, but when you sit back and you've seen most sides play, and generally we watch that much footy over every weekend, I reckon about round 6.
Yeah.
Around then. That's what I've gone off over the last couple of years anyway.
Well, they have got a huge game coming up. Because Collingwood staring down the barrel at 0-3. That's next Friday night. That will be enormous. And as I say, somehow, Purple, and I don't know how, because they haven't had great sides in the last two or three years, but the Maggies get on a plane and fly to Sydney and perform.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
And it's been at the Homebush venue, hasn't it, for much of that duration. But back at the SCG, you'd think that would switch the favourite.
Probably would,
into
but they'll still back themselves into that game.
Well, they need to, don't they? Because their season is on the line.
Quick mail.
Todd Goldstein, North Melbourne Ruckman. Jim did definitely leave the training track yesterday on crutches and is in serious doubt for the North Melbourne game against Geelong tomorrow. Haven't yet made a decision, the Roos, but is in doubt. It's a lower leg, BT. Lower leg and quite low, I believe. But that's the issue.
I think it's
crutches last night.
I think it's ankle, isn't it?
I think it could be ankle, but it's certainly lower leg.
All right, 23-point win for the Western Bulldogs last night. Marcus Bontempelli, star midfielder, 2 goals, 1, 30 possessions. His star continues to rise, and he joins us on Triple M Footy. Marcus, welcome.
G'day, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Well played last night yourself and your club. Just look like you're doing enough to me. People don't, I think, understand what that extra month, or now 5 weeks, that the other clubs get on you means. But last night you played the Swans, who were in exactly the same shape fitness-wise. You probably had your better team out there and you did exactly what you needed to do.
Yeah, I mean, going into the season, we obviously knew that our preparation was going to be a tiny bit different to previous years. So I think a lot of that is just understanding and having awareness for the fact that we're not going to be feeling probably exactly the same as we were this time last year. And just then being able to understand how to win games off the preparation that we've had.
What was it about last night? They obviously got off to a really good start. And I go back a couple of years ago when you actually beat Sydney in Sydney. It was almost you young boys sort of growing up and saying, we can take on the big boys. But they got off to a really good start last night. So you had to fight your way back into the game.
Yeah, they did. And that's obviously not the way we wanted to go into the game. But I think we obviously knew where we had to fight our way back, and particularly for us as a group, that meant that we had to probably arrest some more momentum around the contest and around the ball, because that's ultimately sort of where they were really flying. So being confident, I think that you can make changes in game and not let, I guess, the momentum shift or start like that really impact the outcome of the game, and just being confident that we could really get back on the hunt inside and influence and bring the game back to where we needed it to be.
Ling Jong was a beauty last night. Missed out on last year's grand final. Played in the VFL grand final. Probably his best game I've seen him play. What did you think?
Yeah, it's great. It's so obvious when Jongy is playing well because of his sheer power and speed. He does provide a great level of, I think, versatility for us both in the midfield and up forward, and we love being able to see Johnny go well, and I think everyone else does, particularly because it's so obvious because of the type of athlete he is. So it was great for him, and it's great for us to have him really doing his best.
Marcus, so many good signs coming for the Bulldogs in the first two games. Good players are not being able to get into the 22, and one of the ones that's keeping those good players out of the 22 is Travis Cloak. A really good first up effort last week and quite an extraordinary effort last night. 3 goals, 2, 18 possessions, and just felt and looked as though he was part of this makeup. What's your take on him? And we'll also, as part of this conversation, have a listen to Luke Beveridge's take from that game last night.
Yeah, he's been great, Trav. Probably firstly and foremost is the type of person that he is. I think he's added a level-headedness to the group, particularly in the front half of the game. He's obviously gotten a heavy amount of experience, having played a lot of games at Collingwood. But in terms of what he's been able to provide us on the field, has been great. He provides a great contest for us. And I think that the thing about for us, and particularly as a team, is that we've never been too reliant on any individual player, and that's how we see the game being played from our end of things. So I hope that that's been able to help Travis a little bit, but from what he's been able to provide us in these early parts of the year, it's been nothing short of incredible. So it's great for him and even better for us as a team.
And your coach, Luke Beveridge, last night really endorsed his place in the team.
It was great to see Travis do what he did in the first half. Yeah, that was power forward, influential stuff. Help your teammates walk taller. He was quite brilliant So it's great for him to do that in his second AFL game for the club.
Now, that's a big wrap from the coach there. Hey, I want to ask you, I know you follow your American sport like most of the footballers do these days, and you hear the superstars over there, LeBron, talk about how Steph Curry wins the MVP, and you hear LeBron say, well, it doesn't matter. I'm the best player in the world. I'm easily the best player in the world. Where do you see yourself? You won the best and fairest in a premiership year, but do you see yourself alongside the likes of Pendlebury, Dangerfield, Fife, Sloan, these guys now? Do you honestly see yourself next to those guys?
I probably don't think about it too much, to be honest with you. It's never been something I've ever really thought about too much of. I think, particularly in the environment we are, at the Bulldogs, and I imagine most clubs would be very similar, that there's nothing really too, I guess, honed in on as an individual.
That's the way Duck thinks, Marcus. That's the way the sort of Duck goes about it.
Yeah.
So there's no drive there.
That way.
There's no drive there, Bont, to be the best player in the competition. I mean, Dangerfield and these guys and Fife say, they watch other players, Ablett, they want to be the best player in the comp. Do you want to be the best player?
Yeah, I think I watch other players, and I think go about it in more of an admirable way. But I think I'm more probably focused here on the environment, creating a more team environment and being able to add, I think, a legacy more so as opposed to right now, and thinking about what I want to do and then how I want to be seen at this point in time. It's more, I think, about maybe when I'm gone and when I'm done, the legacy I'm able to leave behind for other people and other players somewhere down the track.
Hey, Marcus, what I'm really loving about your footy is the fact that you're getting forward and hitting the scoreboard. Tell me how that works. Does Luke say to you, when it feels right for you, jump out of the middle and push yourself forward when you think you've got a matchup you can expose, or does the runner come out and get you down there? How are you managing that on the field?
No, it's more systemated probably than that. We definitely go into the pre-game with an idea of how the rotations are going to work and how I'll spend time. And most of our players and midfielders will spend time forward at any given stage. So I think that's just been a big positive and plus for us is being able to really play versatile roles and be flexible. And it's something I think that makes us probably really hard to predict from an opposition point of view. So,
Bont, with all the dearest respect to Libba, he can go forward as hard as he likes. He ain't doing that sort of damage. You're a 6'3" operator who can clunk it in the air.
Come on, Bont.
Very different matchup. When they send you forward, all sorts of hell can be created.
Come on, Bont.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. I've got a bit to go probably in terms of my forward craft. I've traditionally played more midfield, and I still feel sometimes I'm fighting out of my weight range, but the odd ball does bounce the right way and you're lucky enough to get on the end of it, then maybe it makes me look more natural than maybe I am.
Hey, Marcus, you've got so much to contend with in a winning dressing room post-match. You've got ice downs, coaches, debriefings. You've now got a rampaging and sometimes whispering Brian Taylor with live camera and microphone to deal with. The two matches you've played this year, you've already copped him twice. It must be a bit disconcerting for someone who's normally pretty composed.
Come on.
No, he's a smooth operator, BT. He does well. He's not much of an influence for the boys. And it's an interesting change to the normal way that I think we're used to receiving probably interviews post the game. So, he's pretty thoughtful, BT.
He's not.
Definitely asked the question. But it's really hard to say no when there's a camera.
Bristol, you've become a dressing room microphone pachone. That's it. You're going straight to the Bont and saying, I want some Bont time.
I've got a bit of Mickey Robbo.
Hey, what's the rest of today hold? You've got a nice Friday night win. What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm at the VFL at the minute, just watching the Footscray boys go about their business. But it's the one thing that you do, I guess, really value about being able to play on a Friday night is being able to maximise the 2 days after just for a bit of rest. We haven't probably had a lot probably in past years gone by, so it's great to have the opportunity to spend 2 days to just chill out and relax, and hopefully the VFL boys get a win today.
Well played, fantastic personally, and the team 2-0, great start.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Marcus Bontempelli, no one enjoyed Friday night football more than the Duck.
Very similar to how we used to go about it when we played Friday night. and have a quiet lunch.
Did you even know the VFL were playing anyway?
No. Was you even been home by now?
No. He just went to... They used to go to Sydney for a couple of days. Yeah.
Come back Monday morning.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Until Pago said, okay... Yep. 7 a.m. Monday morning training, boys. Yeah. That stuffed them up.
Duck wasn't even aware there was a VFL team.
What? People get dropped?
Speaking of last night, before we get Gil McLachlan, who's only a couple of minutes away, Tom Boyd, one possession to half-time demo, then took a lovely big clunk and kicked a goal.
Yes.
But I think he ended up with 7 for the match. We forget how young this bloke is. He played 38, 37 games or something. So he's still relatively... a baby in football terms, especially for tall players who develop later. Yep. But the spectre of what he gets paid continues to dominate any conversation he's ever involved.
Yeah, and it does on the back of the AFL releasing the figures recently in a generic form, and you dig a bit deeper and you establish the fact that he got paid significantly more on 2016 figures alone, $1.7 million a year.
And how do you come to the conclusion with the generic
with that figure?
Figures,
yeah. You don't reveal how you get it, but that is what happened last year, and that was because that was the second year of the Bulldogs contract, but the first year of the fresh money coming in, because he was initially on the second year of that GWS deal when he got to the Bulldogs, effectively on $100,000 or thereabouts. So last year, on the back of this $7 million deal going down, the Bulldogs, and I think rightly and well done mathematically, gave him some massive money up front. Now, that figure's come down from 1.7 this year and will be less than the 1.7 for the duration of the contract. But it is an extraordinary number. It's either the biggest single-year earning by an AFL player ever, and if it's not the biggest, it's the second to only Gary Ablett when he first went to the Gold Coast. And while, you know, the Bulldogs and Tom himself don't like us talking about this aspect of his football career, the money, it's never going to go away from him, Jim. And as you say, when he's got one touch to half time, but I look at it, the deal's already been returned by way of what he did in the grand final.
He made it all back in the grand final.
Yeah, I agree.
I voted on the Norm Smith. I know I gave him best on ground. I thought he was the Norm Smith.
You gave him three, did you?
I gave him three.
I don't recall that. Yeah.
And everyone after watching it thought he was best on ground.
It's almost a consensus now.
And that in itself is paid back every cent.
The entire operation, I reckon.
But I agree. He's got off to a slowish start this year. He didn't get a lot of the ball last night. I do like the way...
Took a beautiful mark last
night. He attacks the footy. Yeah, and that's the attack that I like. Yep. He never gets out marked. That's the other thing that I like about him. Mm. But you've got to remember, he is young. He had a breakout game in the grand final and the prelim final.
Prelim was good.
Where he fought really hard.
When Roughhead went down,
he had to play in the ruck the whole day, BT.
And you consider the gutsy decision that was made to leave a team like GWS. Yeah. You know, they're going to... be a good team and go to a team that he's not sure about and it come off. I mean, it was, you know, he would see it as good foresight.
Peter Gordon, you never saw a happier man for Tom Boyd than Peter Gordon last year. Obviously, it's the first time I
can think of where a club's bought a future this strongly.
Yeah.
Normally with that money, it's Buddy, who was already an established superstar. Yeah. If Nate Fyfe leaves Freo at the end of this year, he'll go on that sort of money because he's an established superstar. This is future buying, and that's why it's fascinating.
Okay, I'll ask you this then. So Tom Boyd comes, he's getting paid all that money. He's a young kid, got a lot of improvement. Bulldogs have already got a premiership out of him. As I said, he was a Norm Smith medalist. Sydney spend all this money on Buddy, thinking they were going to get a couple of premierships and still haven't got that elusive premiership. So what money has been better spent?
Yeah.
You would argue,
you would argue
that the Bulldogs are already ahead of where Sydney are with Buddy.
Yeah.
Well, hold that thought, because the boss of the AFL, very casually attired too, Gil McLachlan's just wandered in. Hello, mate.
I knew I'd be coming and seeing Wayne in his sliding zip-on half park number.
Yeah, you're dressed better than your brother anyway, Gil.
Not hard.
What are you doing, please? Just wandering up and down the boxes, or have we exclusively got you?
No, I'm doing 752 interviews today, and you're probably the highest priority. Yeah.
Well, we should be the highest priority. Firstly, because we pay more than anyone else. More people listen to us than anyone else. So if you're going to drop any bombs that are going to be newsworthy, we'd prefer it up on an air station.
It's the modesty I love in here.
No.
Hey, Gil, Robbo's article in regard to the women's competition and the awards night, it just looked like to me that he spent more time, you know, looking at the relationship with Erin and her partner than he did actually at the, you know, the medal ceremony itself and looking at the medal. And, of course, Caro wanting you to be the top of the social issues as well for equality and all of that sort of thing. Seems to me that you can't win in your position whichever side you take. And should it be a political football anyway, or should it just be concentrating on the fact that she's won the medal?
Well, I think the focus that night clearly was, you know, concentrating on the fact she won the best and fairest, was the best player in the league, won the MVP in the grand final, and was just a star. What is a byproduct of our game is that we are, you know, at a core of our of what we do and what we're about is equality, and it means that we are also, because of that, leaders socially. My personal view is that, you know, we should just lead and demonstrate leadership and get on with it, and not on and lecture people, and hopefully we're demonstrating that, whether it's on
which is what Aaron said.
On gender or whatever it is. I mean, the thing I said this in an interview a couple of weeks ago. This issue around sexuality has just, you know, there's been sitting around there, people yapping it around for years on the men's game. We just sailed through it. Aaron clearly there with her wife. No one made a big deal of her and got on because no one, I don't think, really cares.
Yeah.
She's a striking-looking woman, a great player who's married to another woman, and no one really cared. They talked about the footy.
To her credit, she said, "Damo, I don't want to be used as a political football. I just want to be judged on my sport."
Mm. Why then, Gil, did you feel that the two papers in this town then made big things about it and getting lectured to do something in The Age, and also the Herald Sun version of it making some comments that I think flew in the face of where people were at with this issue? The sensual remark that was referred to in Mark Robinson's column over the act of kissing Aaron's wife. I mean, what did you make of that?
There's a lot written every day on lots of subjects, Damon. I don't reflect on it too much. I know I'm pretty clear about where we are and what we've got to do. I know what my personal views are. I know where our game is. And I just focus on that because there's pressures and pushes every day. On this issue, you know, the AFLW has been an amazing success. Aaron Phillips is a star. She's gay, no one cares. I think that the normalisation of the issue for a lot of people who are finding their sexuality hard is fabulous. That's the leadership of our game, that actually a woman who's an amazing player and been lauded and is so confident in herself, I think that's leadership from her. I think the game's given it that context, and for people who are having a hard time, they look to that. That's how role our game plays. It doesn't need me out there lecturing everyone.
On the AFLW, and it has been an unbelievable success, and congratulations on it. And also, I have loved the way the girls have carried themselves, and I think a lot of the AFL men's clubs can learn a lot from the way they allowed media access and the beautiful, natural way the girls approach being asked about promoting their game. I thought it was absolutely magnificent. The only issue, and I didn't watch every second of it, Gil, the only issue is they don't hit the scoreboard enough.
Mm.
How's that going to be fixed?
Well, improved during the year. And there's a couple of things. A couple of the women, you know, coaches like Craig Starcevich and Bec Goddard had coached women before, I think, kept the structures in place, and they scored more than the other teams from the start. So there's sort of an understanding about the women. The standard will improve.
With the part.
JB.
Yep.
There'll be 40 young girls, under 17-year-olds will come into the system this year, as I understand it, as good as the top 40 players this year. They'll get another pre-season. There'll be other athletes coming in. So the standard will improve. I think the understanding about how the spread and actually how you get the scoreboard, I think, will improve. And I think it'll happen over time. And, you know, I don't think they're going to be scoring 100 points like the teams have been kicking in the men's.
Can you help that a bit by doing what they've been asked to do loosely in the TAC Cup, and that is have three or four stay back inside the 50s and perhaps shorten the grounds and not have a 50 and
well,
have a 40?
I think the shortening of the grounds is one, the other part. Then you can do some structural stuff. There's been a bit of a discussion around that. It is, and the women, there's been changes already made, BT. Like they use a smaller ball, 16 aside, and the women at the start were slightly resistant because didn't want to feel different. But it's like, this is a 100-year journey. We're year one. We can do things differently. And it actually has improved it. And I think there's other changes that could be made.
The Sydney Swans conspiracy theory against their club and the AFL and, of course, the umpires in the grand final and then last night with the deliberate goal against. How would you go just lobbing into Sydney at the minute, Gil, do you reckon? how welcome would you be?
I hope welcome. It's tough. I can't. It's obviously known that the Swans feel
aggrieved
about the umpiring in the grand final last
year. Did you agree with that decision last night?
if you look at it this morning, if you take all of the context of the grand final out, and if you take the context of it was, I think, scores are level in the last quarter, I think it's the right call. He was almost at the top of the square. He had an option to take it and to distribute it. If it was on the wing, you wouldn't even question it that it was deliberate. It's because of the all of the context, it feels like it's a big issue. But if I try this morning, I've spoken to Simon Lethlean, who's spoken to the umpires. You look at it, you look at the rule, you look at that he was at the top of the square. He had the opportunity to take possession. You know, the things that go to the rule around pressure and everything else. If you look on its own, it's the right call. It's the context that, you know, it makes feel tough. And I know, you know, the Swans, the pressure on the coach is enormous. And so if you have the context, though, of the feeling that I know where the Swans are at, then it feels tougher.
I disagree. Pickens slowed down. He was about a metre and a half away. Pickens, one of the best pressure players in the competition. So I thought he was under pressure. Is the penalty too harsh? And to make it easier for the umpires, do we just make it the same as the deliberate out of bounds? Is that something that could come in next year? Because it just makes it easier. Because then that decision is a really, really easy one. Whereas I like I said, I'm one that thinks that there's probably a lot of Sydney people.
Well, what are the votes in here? Who thought it was
I'm right? The opposite. I think it was the right decision.
Hmm. Yeah. No, I thought it was too harsh.
I thought it was too harsh too, Gil. Gil, yesterday you announced early in the morning after a long discussion around the Twilight Grand Final that indeed it was going to stay at 2:30. I want to get your just quick take on the why. But before you do, please take a listen to Chris Judd last night with his take on the non-decision.
Now, two votes. We're tackling the AFL.
Oh.
For failing to move the grand final to a twilight time spot.
You wanted it, did you, Judy?
Well, I think I speak on behalf of all ex-footballers that cash is really the opportunity. And the opportunity for cash is greatly enhanced with the Twilight Grand Final. And it's almost as if the AFL have made this decision without even thinking about their ex-players. And I'm not ruling out an entire movement against this decision. Some of the players have been in touch. Don't smash our cash is the hashtag.
Don't smash our cash.
And
you pay tax on it, don't you? You do.
Can do, Damien. You can.
Why all this build up to the Twilight possibilities and then nothing?
It wasn't nothing.
Well, it isn't nothing. You condition the community, the industry, the world for a change, and then
there's two parts about it. You can set your watch that in the days after the final of the Australian Open tennis, the media gets into a lather. So don't handball all this our way, Damo. You are part of the frothers and the bubbles.
You built it up to, I'm going to make a decision and an announcement on the Twilight
You're one
final.
Of the great frothers.
I don't. I'm not one that cares whether it's a 2:30 or it's twilight or it's a night game at all. I know it'll happen at some stage. Is it? No. I want to know. Are you waiting, though? Are you waiting for the right act?
Ooh.
To make it
you mean,
a nighttime game and or
you mean
a twilight
act?
Yes, PT.
Ooh.
Are you waiting for that?
There's just a lot of different things. And so to go back to Damo and answer your question, Wayne, it's part of the advantage of the last 3 weeks, Damo, is you get to have a conversation with the industry, with the fans, football clubs and others. And there's an upside in that. It's actually a good thing. So that's what's happened because this decision, there's no business case for it, like it's going to be more money or whatever. It's can we have the best day in Australian sport improved? So, and what do people want? And that's coaches, players, footy clubs, fans, you know, you, Damo, what do you want to do? What helps for your day and your incredible whatever you do? so part of that, as we walked through this process, we got to the thing and when we sat down with the management team to say, you know, there could be a better spectacle. Probably 60% of fans were opposed. And so if you're going to change that, because that doesn't make the decision, you want to make sure you've got every part of it bedded down and everything tight. And we went through it, whether it's, you know, okay, we're going to celebrate that actually beyond the game, it can be a better entertainment. You want to feel that you've got the entertainment. You want to get all the logistics at halftime. Can we do it in a way that you don't impinge on the integrity of the game so that the players actually, you know, we've got to about 28, 29 minutes could be the max. And could you do it? They're the sort of details I went through and I couldn't sit there and say, okay, if the majority are opposed, we are going to take on this journey because I'm committing to you that it'll be better. I just don't think we had all the execution right.
I think we touched on something there. I think Lionel Richie, I think James Blunt, I think Brian Adams are C-grade acts that are bloody dragging their ass over here and just giving us nothing. If we can get ACDC, if we can get Bruce Springsteen, if we can get you two, we make it a twilight game and there's a massive bang.
That's what I
That's
reckon.
A deal.
Right. Well, you're big enough to do that. You're one of the great star enjoyers I've ever come across. You can barnacle onto a star better than anyone I've
met. JB.
So I want you to personally take this on.
Okay. Who is it? ACDC.
ACDC, Bruce Springsteen, you two.
That's it.
One of those three.
Okay.
But get them Twilight Grand Final.
All right, done.
All right, you'll be nowhere near as entertained in any of the other boxes. So you say it's going downhill from
now. Springsteen's the one. If you got Springsteen. Oh,
there
go
you
Twilight,
are. You? Oh, now the twinkle's coming.
But make it a night game.
Yeah, perfect. Good luck with everything coming up. The Women's League, a great triumph. Well done with that, and good luck with the season.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
We've just had the annual chat with the CEO of the AFL, Gil McLachlan, and already social media piling in, telling us this was the line they enjoyed the most. Have a listen.
You're one of the great frothers.
Now, Damo, he actually a couple of times had you in the crosshairs. What's that all about?
I thought you two got
on all right.
Unlike the former CEO who didn't speak to me for close to 2 years, Jim, I get on pretty well with Gil. But I'm interested in your line of questioning, Jim. You went down one path with the access to media and the attitude that the AFLW competition as a rule and as a whole took to media and promotion of the game. The reason for...
Well, I'm not talking access because I don't know enough about that. That'd be other people would have to tell you whether the girls' clubs were really good at access. I don't know about that. But what I loved, Damo, is every time one of those players fronted up in the media, they did it with good grace. They did it with an awareness of what they were trying to promote. They were open. They were wanting to do it. It was refreshing for me to watch that.
And you're saying
I would go to a few of because there are a few of the clubs in this comp who are woeful. In my view, and if I was the AFL, I'd be saying Channel 7, Foxtel, part with 2.6 billion, Triple M now pay a hell of a lot of money, and so do the other radio stations, much more than we ever did. And I'd be going to a few of the clubs in this comp and saying, listen, you front up, and when you front up, you get a smile on your face and you actually promote what we're about here, and don't do it as if you've been dragged through a hedge, and you know, do it in a way that actually sells what we're about, because I'm buggered, and I reckon if you went to a few of the big wigs at the media, they'd be saying, unless we start getting A, better access, and B, better attitude, we're not going to bloody keep putting this money up.
I reckon those meetings are happening now behind closed doors.
But, Jim, I think the problem is the money does always get stumped up. I know what you're saying, because I live it every day, and I get said no to every day by footy clubs. But, I mean, again, rights holders are still getting said no to,
as JB
said, and that's a new part of the game. But the bottom line is Channel 7 will still stump up more money next time than they're currently getting, and I can't see it improving, no matter what you're saying by way of idealism.
Well, it is an idealistic helicopter view. I get that, Damo, but I just reckon these girls have done a brilliant job of doing it properly.
Yep.
You know? And when they've got a hot iron at the moment, the AFL, to go to. Yep. Not all clubs, and I'm biased, but I think North Melbourne are very good. I think Collingwood are very good. But there are four or five clubs that are woeful still and need a kick in the arse.
And my belief is that the media people at each of these clubs, most of the clubs, not all of them, but at most of the clubs, their job is to promote the club, but what their objective is, because they're dealt with by the footy department, is to let's avoid as much media as possible for this club.
Yeah, and that's often driven by the coach of our club.
We saw St Kilda during the week respond very strongly to something that you broke on the footy show. Just talk us through the Sean Dempster issue.
Okay, Sean Dempster, we did on the footy show, Jim, say that he was considering his future, and he is indeed doing that. He may well not play the game of footy at any level again as a result of what's happened in the past fortnight here. The timeline of events, and sometimes it's best to just go back through the order in which things happen to fully understand a situation. Left out of round one team for St Kilda against Melbourne. Then chose not to play in the VFL. Had an issue with the club during the week. Left training early at one stage. Conversations are now happening. Alan Richardson, asked why Sean Dempster at the time was left out of the team, said that he was missing for form reasons. Okay, that was the response that Alan Richardson gave. Yesterday, when asked on the result of the footy show revealing that there were issues between Sean and the footy club, had this to say.
He didn't get selected based on form. There is a chance that that his form, you know, certainly in the last game, had been compromised by what he's dealing with now. But really, that is speculation. I don't really know, but there is a chance that his form had been compromised because of what he's dealing with.
So just back over, Jim, 100% Sean Dempster was absolutely annoyed, extremely disappointed at not being selected in that round one game. The concussion issue, which is now...
But lots of guys would have been annoyed.
Correct. But he chose... Lots of guys didn't go and play VFL. Now, Sean Dempster is now currently working out when I say working out, it's a serious issue, and it is part of the storytelling around Sean Dempster. Concussion has been something that he's been hit with, Duck, over the course of his career, and he's had a couple of really big knocks. The concussion issue with which St Kilda is now saying he's dealing with would not at all be an issue if Sean Dempster was picked last week and was playing again this weekend, Brian. So that has become the line that St Kilda is using, and that's fine. It's part of the Sean Dempster issue. If he's playing AFL last week and this week, not an issue.
How long is he contracted for?
One more year, as far as I know.
One more year. Okay, so he's got next year.
No, this year. Just this year. As far as I know it to be, Duck, yeah. And, right. And the way I understand the situation.
That does make a difference now, obviously, with what's in the new players' agreement, BT, because if you were to leave the game for a serious enough injury, as you know, players then get paid the year after.
No, it's not as simple as that, Duck. It has to be a non-existing injury, and just quickly, if you compare it with what Dane Swan, yeah, that was a fresh injury. Breaking of the leg where it was broken was a first off for Dane. The concussion issue with Sean Dempster is an accumulation, and without weighing this conversation down, the access to compensation is nowhere near as neat when it comes to that.
All right, well, what's this space on that one now? Dear Brian is... Thank you, Brian. Yeah. It's something we've been now doing for a week. We had an issue last week where a young man was picked in a fourth grade basketball grand final, or he could go to Indented Head or somewhere with his missus.
I believe he...
Lake's Entrance, I think.
With a 9.5. And yes. I believe he chose to go on the date.
He went to Lake's Entrance.
Yes,
he didn't play in the fourth grade grand final.
And they won.
On the back of Bristol's advice.
And they won the GF.
All right, so what we do is we get you emailing us with any inquiry, life inquiry, that you think Brian can help you with, and that's what Rick of Watsonia has done.
I also heard that she left him.
Oh, so, now you're laying the mayo. All right, so here we go.
Strikes me as they should be directed to Duck.
Rick of Watsonia has written in, Dear Brian, have always loved your work. Oh. I have an issue with my next door neighbour and have had the same issue for some time, but it's come to a head. Every week on a Monday, he sneaks stuff into my recycling bin, which fills my bin up to the brim. Start of the week, I've got the rest of the week with a full recycling bin. Any advice would be greatly appreciated, Bristle. I know you're a very calm and calculated type of person. Cheers, Rick of Watsonia. So, Bristle, he puts his bin out on a Monday. It gets emptied. By the time he comes home from work to bring the bin back in, the neighbours already put stuff in there and he's got no room to move for the rest of the week. What do you suggest he do?
It's complicated. It is complicated.
Now, this is a community service you're offering here, Brian.
This is the yellow bin, is it?
The recycling bin.
Look, I'm not sure, JB, but it strikes me as the neighbour... Isn't a great style of person.
No.
And that perhaps, you know, there's a little bit of friction there.
Yes.
So I'm not sure that I'd battle bin against bin. I'd probably go to the backyard.
Oh!
Pull a picket off the fence. Oh.
But that's your fence too, though.
And I believe the guy writing, he has chooks.
Rick of Watsonia?
Yeah.
He may have.
So a picket off the fence. Let the rock wheeler in next door and let it go to work on the...
eat his chooks.
I believe he has chooks.
Just chase them, not eat them. Because he's a trained non-eater of chicks.
Oh, no.
Just let him loose to chase and just get the payback that way. Put the picket back up once the bin shit stops at the front. Go with something.
Put the Rottweiler in amongst the Rick's neighbour's chickens.
But train the Rottweiler to not eat them.
No.
I couldn't think of anything.
Dear Brian, that's the gold you get. Don't worry. So make sure you keep the inquiries coming in.
And when they write, Dear Brian, Jim, how do they actually say it?
Thank you, Brian. Adelaide, very impressive over GWS. Their coach is down on the boundary. Two-time premiership player, of course, for the West Coast Eagles, Don Pike, Nerilee Meadows. For the first time, we welcome you. Nez, take it away.
Thank you very much. Well, Don, it's hard to say that you can improve on last week's performance, but you've brought back the skipper, Taylor Walker.
Yeah, look, it was a good, solid performance from us last week, and we were really happy with what we produced. But we also understand and reflect on the fact that it gets us 4 points, and you know, from here it's a Hawthorn team that lost last week and are keen to rebound. So we understand the challenge in front of us right now, and great to have the skipper back.
how do you approach Hawthorn at the moment? They're obviously a very different side to what we've come to know. You haven't beaten them as a club in 6 years.
Yeah, look, we've got a lot of respect, obviously, for Hawthorn. They've been a fantastic footy club for a number of years, and you know, three premierships in a row speaks highly of the quality of their players and coaching staff. So we're under no illusions today, and we understand the challenge of Hawthorn at the G. And the fact we haven't beaten them in a number of years, it may provide a small extra motivation, but the reality is this 22 hasn't played the 22 that Hawthorn are going to throw out, and so I don't expect that's going to have any influence on it. It's going to be how we play on the day against Hawthorn.
Pikey, I want to go back to last week, watch that game, and for the first quarter and a half, really competitive game. GWS were, you know, putting you guys under pressure and could have probably gone three goals up, and then there was a bit of a turning point where Green missed a handball, and from that point on, their lack of pressure, and clearly you guys were running on top of the ground, played some really good footy, but how did you approach the guys after that game? Was it simply saying, you know what, boys, really good win? But there was a lack of a lot of pressure for a lot of that game. Yeah. How did you assess it?
Oh, look, from our viewpoint, it was a really good win, and it's important in this industry that we reflect on that and what we learn both ways. It's not only you learn from your losses, you learn from your wins. Yep. And you know, we're able to reflect really positively on some of the things we did and some of the things we created. And you know, that's credit to the players. They're able to come out after a good, solid pre-season and produce that sort of performance in pretty trying conditions with the heat and the fact that it was in play last week. So it was more or less a well done. And we understand we can enjoy that for a period of time, and then we moved on to Hawthorn.
Pikey, I only saw the game on television, and so it's hard to see the whole ground, obviously, when you're only seeing it on the box. But structurally in your forward half, it looked like you're going about it slightly differently to me. Often last year, you got your forwards right up the ground and then tried to get them out the back. But last night looked like there were lots more stay at home, lots more front and centre, getting the big boys to bring it to ground. It looked more conventional. Would that be fair?
Oh, look, we probably mix and match a little bit of with our forward half and some of our...
Oh, we might have just lost.
Oh, there we are. Sorry, mate. We got you. Yep.
Yeah, we want to have that flexibility of, A, how we move the ball, but ultimately also how we set up our forwards. And sometimes the game will allow you to move the ball with speed. Other times it is more kick it into a one-on-one contest. And we're fortunate that we've got a number of really high-quality forwards who can do that and compete really strongly. So, you know, last week we had moments where we would kick it to contests and sort of win it that way. Other times we're able to move the ball with speed. So it's a bit of horses for courses, to be honest. A
couple of begins for both teams today, Don. You get your captain, Tex Walker, back in, and Hawthorn gets its former captain, Luke Hodge, back in. He's obviously been quite worked up, Hodgie, about what happened to him. Do you have a feel for how Alistair Clarkson is going to use him in this particular game?
No, not particularly. We probably expect he'll play through half-back and through the midfield. That's probably where he's primarily played the last couple of seasons. So that's probably what we expect at the moment.
Where's my boy Jakey Lever, Pikey? Why haven't we seen him this year? I know he didn't play any JLT games.
Yep.
How's his form been in the Sandful since?
Yeah, he's been good. He had his first game for 4 weeks last week, and it was a difficult decision to not bring him back in, but it was, in fairness to the guys who played last week, who played really well. And also, I think from Jake, and just in terms of his build, another week was going to be really beneficial for him for the long term. And again, we obviously take a short-term view, but a long-term view as well. And with Jake, he played again last night, got through really well, played some really good footy, and I expect he's going to be banging down the door to come into the side very shortly.
Just before we let you go, Pikey, where do you rate JB in the FF category? That is flog sort of
top
category.
Heavy. Yeah. Just keep it down.
What's that in Pikey? I'm uncertain of the question, Brian.
Well, JB,
Are you asking me whether JB's a good bloke or not? Is that what you're saying?
I'm asking whether he's a flog, actually.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I'll respond. He's a good bloke. So,
Top heavy.
We've got history. We've got history a long way back, Brian.
Carried him through his A-grade career. Top heavy.
You made all those runs, didn't you?
So I want to talk to you about Mitch McGovern, who I love. He jumps beautifully at the footy and catches it, as does his brother, obviously, for the West Coast Eagles. Never seen two sons play less like their father. Old Pudding Guts, who never left the ground in his whole career. But what are your instructions to him? He looks to play so instinctively.
Well, that's one of the keys for Mitch, is all young players. They come in, we want them to, we clearly want to educate them about how we want to play, but when it comes to game day, it's you play on your instincts and you play what you really see. And with Mitch, he's probably a 23, 24 game player now who's still really learning his craft. He brings some great attributes to our team, and he's got a nice blend of, as you say, he can fly for the ball. He's got some good speed. He's improved his aerobic capacity over the, you know, his... He's improved his aerobic capacity over his third pre-season, so he's now able to get up and down the ground better, and he's going to keep getting better and better, which is great for our footy club.
And the other young man that played really well last week and looks really confident after another pre-season is Charlie Cameron. I thought he was a real live wire.
Yeah, look, he had a fantastic game last week, and really all credit to him because he did. You know, I spoke to him in the last year about spending more time up on a wing and through the midfield, and he went away and worked really diligently on his fitness, and the result of that was that, you know, last week we saw him be able to be a sort of a multiple effort and, you know, getting to multiple contests. So great reward for him for the work he's put in.
Hey, good luck. We know how much you love getting to this ground and playing big clubs at the MCG. We wish you well with it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate that.
Don Pike, very impressive young man and doing a very good job with the Adelaide Crows now. We need to go from
pretty straight
talking. Yeah, well, like his back. We need to go from Don Pike to this.
Oven on, knives at the ready. Time to roast duck.
Oh yeah,
all right.
Absolutely.
This is where we just pile into duck.
That's a real flog stinger.
This is not an elongated sort of chitter chatter. This is a
short
and sharp. And don't try and drag it out with long answers, political style.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Righto, Bristol, you open the batting.
How did you rate the umps last night? If I was to say out of 10?
3.
Is Buddy Franklin any chance of breaking Plugger's record?
Yes, I think he is. If he keeps playing, if his body stays like it is now, he's the only player that could break it.
No, next weekend he plays his 250th and he'll probably kick his 800th goal. Where do you rate him amongst the gun centre half forwards of the last quarter of a century?
He's right up there. I think he's. I think Jonathan Brown, Riewoldt. I still think Brereton, Tredray. All of those guys, but he's in the argument.
He's 500
goals, 400 games to get there, Duck, or thereabouts, 380 or thereabouts on his goals per game average.
Quick arithmetic, Damo.
I'm saying he's a very good. If Buddy Franklin could mark the footy, he would have been the best ever.
So he's on 800 goals. He's got to get to 1260. So
if he plays for another 4 years, 5 years, that's what he's still.
What he's going to kick 115 goals a year for the next 5 years.
Okay, BT, I'm just trying to be positive.
Duck, what size shirt do you actually
wear? Yeah, well, because the one you're in at the moment is clearly not the size you should be wearing.
Today,
look at it. Today, I love it. But
today it's a medium, and the less weights I do, the smaller the shirt gets.
Oh, he's just undone one of the buttons. It's about to pop anyway. Yeah.
Now, Duck, Dan Hannanbury. Yes. You know, we know he's a gun little player, boy out of Xavier College, has gone off the terps since last year's grand final, has not had a drink of alcohol, and perhaps his form is, you know...
He's not getting a kick either, Bristol.
We don't want to promote drinking on this show, but I will say...
Is that a dangerous thing?
I will say that it doesn't hurt after a game, and if he's done it in previous years under the right rules within his club, then I would suggest to him, go back to that.
Right. Adelaide Crows fans reckon Tex is going to be better than you would.
Yes.
Do you agree?
Oh, wowee. No. He's got a little bit to go.
Tuck, is Josh Gibson done?
No, I don't think so. We'll find out a little bit about Josh today. I didn't see last week. It's too early. We've played one round.
Yep.
Give the guy.
There was a quieter finish last year.
We talk about Corey Enright winning two best and fairest in premiership years. You know, Josh Gibson has done the same thing at Hawthorn. Give the guy a little bit of breathing space.
Asking the question.
It's round one.
Do you agree that Travis Cloke is very much loved at his current club? And that is assisting his form.
I think that you hear that coming through the coach, and it's the first time that we've heard a coach speak so glowing about Travis for a fair while. I loved his game last night, BT. I thought you was a little bit over the top the week before, but last night he was very, very good.
Who's the best player in the game right now?
Best player in the game? I think it's still Paddy Dangerfield.
All right, that's a nice roasting. Nice roasting. Yep. I certainly like the Tex Walker.
I get very nervous when the roast is on.
News around the place, Damo. We've already covered some, but
we have.
Lots left.
Just back over for those who didn't hear us earlier, that Todd Goldstein of North Melbourne left Arden Street yesterday on crutches after a mishap at training. It relates to a lower leg injury. BT feels it's an ankle.
Ankle, Damo.
And I believe that to be the case and is in significant doubt. Not yet ruled out, Jim, but significant doubt to take his place in the team for North Melbourne against Geelong tomorrow.
One of the great joys, Duck, of not being the chairman anymore. Well, in past years, years, there would be 18 sets of eyes straight on you going, well, now I have absolutely no idea, but he will be a big loss. Obviously.
Rather than say a lower leg, if it's an ankle, just say ankle.
Well, again, BT's got the specifics of an ankle, but it was lower leg. Hey, we touched on Josh Gibson in Roast Duck a moment ago. Look, Cawthorne clearly is preparing for a future without him, and it is most likely going to be at the end of this year, Duck, that he does not go on again. The man, or a man, and they do cast the net very wide, the Hawks, as we know, and they're successful at it, but a man they've identified for a replacement of him is Stephen May of the Gold Coast Suns, a co-captain of that club, and yet to re-sign with the Suns, making noises. You wouldn't touch him, you said?
No, you couldn't get him. Surely they couldn't get
him. Look, it's going to be a long shot, but they have made it known that they do want him. And while Gold Coast Suns is not yet worried about him re-signing, they also know that he's not re-signing.
Gold Coast just can't let any more go.
I wouldn't have thought with Mark Evans now up there either. It would not be
can't let that happen.
A good look for him to not be able to re-secure him already. But they've got an issue. They lost a game last week, as we know, to Brisbane Lions. They didn't expect to lose. They've now got a couple of tough games coming up, and they're going to play Carlton in round four, which, whether we like it or not, it is going to be one of those games that's going to be very, very crucial for Rodney Eade if they both clubs go into that game 0-3. And the Nathan Buckley situation, they're just speaking of coaches. Again, you asked the question of Duck before, how long do you need before you analyse a season? Duck said 6 weeks. I sometimes think it's 8 or 9, but either way, when Nathan Buckley is 0-2 going into this year, he's got. They're not going to be able to control the narrative around
that. Who have they got over the next 2 weeks?
The Pies Sydney up there on Friday night. Then they've got St Kilda, Essendon and Geelong. So it's a pretty tough stretch. And they knew that. And you could argue that they've been okay against the Bulldogs last week. Pretty ordinary against Richmond on the Thursday night. Just gone. And as JB said, the game against
Ordinary. I don't think they were ordinary against Richmond. I thought it was just poor kicking.
Well, it's pretty ordinary.
Just on today's game, Taya Miles debuting today for Hawthorn, son of Jeff Miles, who played at Collingwood and West Coast. Yep. And a bit of the old style sort of Rat Pack, Banksy and all of those guys from that period there. Well, Joffa, his dad, was very much in amongst all of the House of Stoush stuff that went on.
Was he?
Yeah,
was
a man of great fistic fury.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the old stuff, BT,
old
Collingwood times, the Collingwood Footy Club during the week put out a reflective piece upon a 1987 game where Collingwood was 51 points behind Richmond at VFL Park. And you were playing for Collingwood at the time. And it's a really, really well put together video package that you can see on the Collingwood football.
Oh, look at Bristol.
Did they? You actually spent some time being interviewed for it, BT.
And
it's a really...
Hang on. Can I just say something before?
No, you can after.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
It's a really nicely put together piece, Jim. You can access it via the Collingwood Media social platforms. 51 points down at Waverley in 1987.
And BT's,
by the sound of it, got up to his usual behaviour in the first half and cracked it with the world and not got any kicks. But they then interview Brian, and as I said, chronologically, the deficit 51, the comeback, and it's like it's a grand final win in the end, but they get up and win against Richmond. And BT somehow has made it all about himself.
When you're playing against your old side from a personal point of view, it's a great motivation. People underestimate, this is a side that Richmond perhaps didn't want me a couple of years earlier, and all of a sudden now I'm playing with Collingwood. So it's a great opportunity to show them what you can do. I hadn't touched the ball. In fact, I think I was the worst player on the ground in the first half.
And then BT lit up.
Yeah, it was almost surreal because the goals just kept coming and coming. And
we just came from nowhere.
Yeah, it was incredible. Brian Taylor was the star. Had a pretty quiet first half from memory and he fired up. Fired up in the third quarter, got a bit angry and fired himself up, I reckon.
Have the opportunity and get lucky towards the end and kick 6 goals was just, amazing, really.
Oh, come on, Brian.
I
looked at the stats and you weren't even in the best players.
Hang on. I don't know what happened in the first half, but I know we were 51 down. And
yeah.
So, therefore, the ball wouldn't have come down a lot. But the other thing is, I was asked to speak on that game.
And you bet yourself.
But I actually didn't remember that game. I don't remember that game.
So, how do you not remember that? It's not every day you come back from 51 points.
It was just a sixer.
He did say before we heard that, he did say 8. So he thought 8.
I honestly didn't remember the game.
you know, there's a lot of stuff that I don't remember. And that's one of the things I don't remember. But anyway, I was asked to speak on it, so, you know, they jotted my memory.
But you did make it about yourself. I sat through the entire package. Well, and everyone's quite humble about it. You're the only one who said, yeah, well, first half and then won the game.
Damo, who else kicked goals in the second half?
I think Mullane might have got one.
I got six. I mean,
but you don't even remember it.
Tell me someone else that played well. It wasn't anyone else. It was left to me. BT, Lee comes on me. We're 51 down. I said, Lee, get it down to me. Clear it out. Clear the 50 out. Get it down my way. No,
you think you said that because you don't remember it.
And I'm confident that's what was said. And then I can look after proceedings from there, Lee.
Bristol, I'm with you. If you bag 6.5 to get your club up from 50 down, say whatever you like.
Just goes to show you, I was playing with a bunch of bloody rattle pack.
I like it, Bristol. Don't ever go changing. Hey, I looked at a fair bit of tape of the two teams today because I hadn't seen any of Adelaide and only seen a little bit of Hawthorn in the pre-season, Duck. And during the course of watching that tape, what occurred to me is that the 10-metre protected zone rule has completely gone. I reckon 10, in the two halves I watched, I reckon there were 10 examples in that sort of time, in those four quarters, where last year, when it was hot, they would have pinged all 10 of them and all 10 were ignored.
Yeah, I watched it. I watched that fairly closely as well because I thought the first round, the first game that we saw of the season, Carlton-Richmond, I thought the way Richmond played, they really used that. Carlton actually didn't give any of those away and they were out of that 10. It allowed them to play on and really go on that arc that we like to see and got the ball in quickly. But then this weekend from Thursday, Friday night live, obviously, and I've noticed a lot of them as well, JB. A lot running through that area, a lot now being in the area and then putting their hands
up.
Which
the AFL said you're not allowed to do.
That's correct. Right. Yep. Putting their hands up saying, okay, I'm here, but I'm not meant to be here. Well, that at times last year, well, not at times, a lot, that was paid as a 50-metre.
Also,
not being paid.
The thing I'm interested in, Damo, is the AFL and Mark Evans at that time, now Simon Lefflin, but Mark Evans at that time, very hot on it. Very hot on the hand in the air won't be tolerated, but also very hot on how much better is footy being played because of this rule.
Mm.
Like they were very, very happy with the impact that rule was having.
Yep.
Now, one round and two game sample in, it has been abolished.
In actual fact, if you're in that protected area and you put your hands up, you're covering more. You're covering more
yeah,
of
you
the
are.
Area.
Yeah, yeah.
When you put your hands up.
There was one in the Essendon game, Duck, where I think it was Joe Danaher, centre of the G. Isaac Smith nearly brushed past him after he took the mark. That's 50. That's a shot on goal, Brian. It's being ignored. I want to know why.
It's not there.
Ryan, the great umpire protector.
Oh, what is it, Bristol?
I think both you and Duck perhaps should go to the footy with a lighter mood in mind and go there with just the eyes to view the game.
Don't give me happy, Brian. Where's this come from?
Who's
first
got to
time
you?
In 20 years.
Who's
go
got
there,
to you?
Don't go there with eyes of negativity. Go there and see what the real people
Lewis Martin's
see.
Got
there's,
to
there's
give.
Money in, see there's money in this.
Someone, the scoring.
Channel 7 has muzzled you.
See the scoring.
Who is it? Lewis Martin?
Someone's got to you, Bristol.
Or is it higher up?
I just love the game.
You're a curmudgeon.
Kerry Stokes.
You're normally a curmudgeon. And at the moment, Bristol, you've got a smile under that moustache.
I just can't stand Duck over there with his white shirt busting out. Like
has Tim Warner got to you?
No one's got to me.
Someone has.
I'm ungettable.
You're buyable. You're purchasable, aren't you? Your opinion is purchasable.
Yeah.
Every single issue.
And it's getting cheaper and cheaper.
I have a couple of ambassadorial ships.
Shut up. The footies on Triple M.
Triple M rocks football.